This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. You're with me, Juliet Jacobs, and also with Dashun Johan and Lim Soo Ann. Earlier, we found out more about Sembang Baru or New Conversations by PEN Malaysia, which is a series of free online dialogues which is being held in conjunction with the Georgetown Literary Festival 2020. So if you missed that, don't worry, the podcast will be up shortly, so you can search for that on the BFM app or at bfm.my. But now we're going to turn our attention to something completely different, the role of doulas in home births. And if you have any thoughts, you can always share that with us. You can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio.
Yes, and earlier this week, Minister of Health Dr. Adam Baba addressed Parliament about the issue of doulas playing a role in assisting home births. He had been replying to a question from Bandar Kuching MP Dr. Kelvin Yee about the government's plan to regulate the doula trend in Malaysia in order to prevent a rise in unsafe births and preventable deaths among mothers and infants. So Dr. Adam said that the Ministry of Health does not recognise doulas as midwives. So Section 14(1) of the Midwives Act 1966 imposes a fine of 2,000 ringgit, maximum 1 year's jail or both, if you're found to be unregistered but providing midwife services.
Yeah, but what do midwives do that doulas can't? So we'll be getting an expert to clarify that in a bit. But first, let's look at the origins of doulas and what they currently do. So the word doula actually comes from the Greek word meaning female servant. And traditionally, they are not a family member or healthcare professional, but they serve as a birth coach to an expectant mother. So in this role, they are supposed to provide emotional or physical support to the mother. In some cultures, they also serve as go-betweens in the birthing process, you know, to help couples kind of navigate what is seen as over-medicalized healthcare setting.
So the use of doulas is most commonly associated with home births. Again, this has to do with what you just mentioned, Juliet, that perception that the hospital setting is quote-unquote over-medicalized and not mother or baby-friendly. And that's what leads some couples to have their babies at home. So in this context, the home birthing trend has nothing to do with low income or lack of access to healthcare. Instead, it is a choice born out of the belief that the birth process should be completely natural, or what they call quote-unquote gentle birthing, and what that means is with no medical assistance.
Right, but natural doesn't mean risk-free. In February 2018, the media reported about a baby who died in a home birth that was assisted by a non-healthcare professional. In that same year, then-Minister of Health Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad said that the ministry would meet with doula practitioners in an effort to regulate their services. But in this week's parliamentary reply, his successor, Dr. Adam, did not talk about any efforts to regulate the industry.
And it is an industry. You know, anecdotally, there are many home birth support groups in Malaysia, and they seem to have been growing, growing influence, actually. And many of these groups are on social media and online platforms, and they use personal testimonies from other mothers to convince clients that home births are superior to hospital births. And by the way, if you read some of the testimonies, you will see that there is a trend to what the mothers advocate for, and that is no epidural, no surgery, and no immunization for the baby after birth.
So interestingly, our healthcare system does allow low-risk mothers to give birth in a home setting. So the MOH has guidelines on the management of home births, but a trained health worker, so someone like a midwife or a community nurse, must be present during the birth. And remember, a doula is not a health worker unless she or he is a trained and registered midwife.
And MOH does appear to recognise the growing need to make hospitals more mother-friendly. Since 2012, there has been a mother-friendly care component in the ministry's baby-friendly hospital initiative that encourages a companion during birth to provide emotional and physical support. A low-risk maternity centre was also set up in Putrajaya in 2012, where mothers can deliver in a setting specially set up to resemble a home birth, but with fully equipped medical facilities and medical personnel. So you pay more than you would at a government facility, of course.
Yes, and speaking of paying, according to online portal Makcik.com, who interviewed a doula back in 2015, you should expect to pay about 1,800 ringgit for a doula doula to attend your hospital birth. So this includes being on call 24/7 for the expectant couple 2 weeks before and after the delivery. And we couldn't find any information about how much doula services would cost if you were to engage them for home births.
Yeah, the fact is it's, you know, so hard to find proper information about doulas and home births. And that really concerns us. And the idea of delivering a baby without a doctor or nurse on hand is also worrying. But don't just take our word for it. Here to tell us more about it is Prof. Chan Yu Kuen, consultant obstetric anesthesiologist from University of Malaya. Hi, Prof. Chan. Thanks for speaking to us today. And just for context, some may be wondering why we are speaking to an anesthesiologist about birth practices. So what is your role in the delivery of a baby?
Well, I am an obstetric anesthesiologist, and I have been one for the last 30-odd years. And in the practice of obstetric anesthesia, I actually look after two lives. As an obstetric anesthesiologist, I don't just attend to the mother at the time of delivery. There is a lot of planning that is required, especially for those mothers who are considered high risk, or for those babies who are also considered high risk. Because even if the mother is not high risk and the baby is high risk, we as obstetric anesthesiologists are also roped in into planned discussions, not just one, sometimes many, so that the obstetrician, the pediatrician, and any other physician become, we call, stakeholders in the care. And being an obstetric anesthesiologist, we are very much included because of that practice in obstetric delivery to give mothers and their babies a fair chance at good care so that the outcome will turn out to be good.
And what is the role of a trained and registered midwife?
Well, all trained and registered midwives work in collaboration with the whole obstetric care team. And that would include the pediatrician, the obstetrician, and of course, the obstetric anesthesiologist, and all other care providers. They don't work in isolation. And now in Malaysia, as far as I can see, all registered midwives actually work in the hospital setting, because 98 to 99% of our deliveries are in the hospital setting in the modern times.
And can a midwife assist a mother in delivering her baby if there's no doctor present?
You mean to say when they are caught in the situation in the public domain, for example, in the plane or in the kampung where the patient has just, you know, just delivered and don't know what else to do in a very sudden kind of situation, they may have to. So when caught in this kind of situation, yes, but not in a planned situation, because the issues regarding delivery and the complications that can accrue from there is far too much for any single person to want to handle, as well as to be able to do it safely, because they won't have the facilities as well as the complete know-how of a team.
So since you brought up issues, can you explain the kinds of issues or complications that could arise when a mother delivers outside the hospital setting?
Well, there are lots of issues, because one of the issues is we can never predict how a labor of that 8 or 9 hours ultimately will turn out. Most people know that they will deliver normally, especially those who have got no medical or obstetric problems. But still, there are many hidden areas that nobody knows. Even an obstetrician will not know whether the patient is going to have what we call uterine atony for whatever reasons. Although, of course, we do learn what are the predisposing factors that will lead to uterine atony. Now, I'm just bringing up this example because uterine atony can happen to anybody, including while they're pregnant or delivered a firstborn. I do know of instances where this happened. After the baby is delivered, the uterine contraction was just not there. And most times we will put in drugs to help the uterus to contract. Now, if the uterus does not contract properly, the mother has the potential to lose something like, at the maximum, 750 mils per minute. She's just wired to lose that kind of blood, because at the peak of our pregnancy, or, you know, at term, That is the amount of blood flow that goes to the uterus to nourish and provide oxygen and other nutrition for the baby. So if the uterus doesn't contract and the placenta doesn't come out, she has a potential of losing that 1 pint per minute. Please remember, it's 1 pint, 500 mils or so per minute. And when this happens, even in the hospital setting, it is a dire kind of emergency. Simply because if we don't get the mother to a definitive care arrangement, we have had deaths as well before, even in the hospital setting. So can you imagine a mother caught in this kind of situation at home, even if it is about 10 minutes away with the traffic jam as it is, coming to the hospital, making sure this patient is rushed to the theater, can be a good half an hour, 1 hour, by which time the patient would have died from the blood loss. So often these mothers who deliver at home die because of this very issue that I've just highlighted, bleeding to death, and nobody can help them sort out their blood problems.
That's really tragic, Prof Chan. And does this complication happen frequently in home births?
Okay, we do not know the extent of it because it is difficult to gather those kind of data. But let me just put things in perspective for you. There are about 500,000, that means 500,000 delivery every year in this country. Now, out of that 500,000, 10,000 mothers deliver at home. Now, this 10,000 need not necessarily be from the yuppie group. It can be part of the immigrant population, especially in Sabah, where there's a high immigrant population. They choose to deliver at home because, number one, they don't have the money or finance to put themselves into hospital. And usually they will do it very late if they have to. So out of that 10,000, we do know that some of these 10,000 are actually from the yuppie population, especially in the town and city centers. And we do know especially as well, the main cause of problems or death in these patients when they do arrive in the hospital from home deliveries is hemorrhage. And it is very concerning because if you compare mortality rates of mothers who deliver at home, you know, that means out of these 10,000 mothers who deliver at home, compared to the country's 500,000 who delivered in the hospital setting, there's a huge difference. Now, the national maternal mortality rate is 20 to 25 per 100,000 and has been at that figure for the last few triennial reports. But if you focus now on the 10,000 who deliver at home and their maternal mortality is between 70 to 90 per 100,000 live births. In other words, it is about 3 to 4 times higher. And the main cause is bleeding. In fact, if you want to know the real experience that we have, we actually had one. Of course, this was not a yuppie, but a foreigner who, of course, failed to engage herself into the medical system that we have. And when she was about to deliver, her husband happened to have been working at Johor Bahru. So when she was about to deliver, she was working out the intricacies of how to get herself into the hospital because she was bleeding. She actually tried to extricate her baby. That means she was trying to do her own delivery because she hadn't got a bidan or a doula accompanying her. She had no finances, remember? And so she delivered her own baby and the baby, of course, died. And she was bleeding. And of course, the neighbors must have got wind of her. She came directly into our hospital after that. Of course, we all put in our resources to help her. But even after 30 to 40 units of blood and many, many experts coming into the scene to help her, she died. So both mother and child died in the process. That was very tragic. But this is the kind of story that we would like to repeat for everybody to understand the dangers of delivering at home.
That is really very tragic, Prof Chan. But when it I guess, you know, when it comes to the increasing trend of home births, at least those by choice and not circumstances, do we know whether it's linked to the use of doula services?
Well, doulas are the only way for this group of people to feel a little bit safer than if they were delivering, let's say, with their husband delivering the, you know, because they won't have the knowledge. Doulas are usually a group of women who have had attended births before and they have had the courage to do it, or their ex-midwives who have decided as part of their living to secure jobs like this so that they can actually help. But they are unregulated, that means they're not registered, and they are a cause for concern because not only is it illegal, it is causing a lot of harm to mothers as well as babies. In fact, the recent parliamentary discussion was about a baby, and they're still investigating, who died because the baby was delivered at home in the setting where, of course, things went out of hand, and that baby was left in a very dangerous situation with nobody, no experts to help.
So, Prof Chan, is there any indication that the current pandemic may be driving more women to opt for home births if they think that it's safer than going to a hospital?
You've raised a very interesting point. I'm not very sure what the feelings are of those mothers, especially when they come to think about the dangers involved in being admitted, especially in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. But even if they feel that way, they should actually ask the medical people that they have been seeing, the obstetrician. But I mean, in Malaysia, the labor ward setting is still a very safe setting because all patients who are admitted, we actually do swab them. And we try to make sure that they, as well as our care providers, are not spreading the disease. So we actually have to encourage them to come back to the hospital setting and not seek refuge at home, because the dangers of COVID-19, even if it is acquired, is very much less compared to the dangers of bleeding at home without the correct facilities to cope with bleeding. Because bleeding, even in very advanced countries, is still the leading cause of obstetric death.
So before we let you go, Prof, what is your advice for those who are considering engaging the services of a doula for a home birth?
Absolutely refrain from doing it. If you were my daughter-in-law, I would say no. Even if you are my worst enemy, I would still say no. Absolutely no. Don't put your life at risk. Don't put your baby's life at risk. Because if you lose your life, you are condemning your family to a life without you, and that can pull your family apart. Just remember, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. You are a very important member in a happy family. And don't ever think of that few moments where you think that you're risking your life by coming into the hospital, or that you don't feel comfortable with what we call medicalized care. The reason why obstetric care has come to this stage where all deliveries are done in the hospital setting is because we are here to make it safe for you, so that when you go away from the hospital, you actually have an intact life, a happy family, an intact child. All right? We are very lucky in Malaysia. Just think of what's happening in Indonesia. Because medical care cannot provide for the 200 million people, and because there are so many islands involved, yes, a fair number of Indonesian mothers have to deliver at home because of the poor medical care, because of the poor access, and they have a mortality figure that is 10 times worse than ours. So while our figures may be 20 to 25 per 100,000 live births, theirs is about 200 per 100,000 live births. So why subject yourself to this kind of issues and invite them into your domain when you just have the option not to?
Okay, on that note, thank you for joining us today, Prof. Chan. That was Prof. Chan Yu Quen, consultant obstetric anesthesiologist from University of Malaya, clarifying the role of midwives in delivery and the very real dangers of home births.
Yeah, and the issue of doulas does rear its head every now and again, depending on what's reported in the news, but there definitely needs to be a more concerted effort to address it.
Yeah, I mean, we need to find out things like, why are there couples rejecting hospital births? Do we know how many doulas are in the country? And what exactly are they practicing?
Yeah, and also, you know, are current laws enough to keep the services in check? And on that note, you know, our Evening Edition team did have a discussion on the legal aspects of this yesterday. They spoke to a lawyer on the laws governing doula services. So if you want to listen to that perspective, you can download the podcast by searching for doula on our website at bfm.my.
That's right. And if you have any thoughts about this that you'd like to share with us, you can tweet us at BFM Radio or you can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899. If you'd like to drop the Bigger Picture team a message, you can look us up on Facebook. We are at Facebook BFM The Bigger Picture. But I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today's show. If you miss any part of it, you can always download the podcasts at bfm.my/dailydigest. We're on the BFM app. We're on Spotify. You can also download our podcasts at Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. But coming up after the 3 p.m. news on Live and Learn, I'll be sticking around and I'll be speaking to Emeritus Professor Dr. Shahd Salim Farooqi and lawyer Niu Sin Yu, and that's for our Law and Behold episode. And we're going to do a 101 on the budget, you know, because we're going to look at how it's tabled, you know, we're going to look at the whole approval and legislative process, and we're also going to discuss hypothetical situations that could play out should the budget be rejected, which of course, you know, that process is still ongoing. So tune in for that. That's coming up after the 3 p.m. news. For now, we're going to leave you with The Clash and I Fought the Law. This has been the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.